Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. Our guest tonight is Ciara Gibson, and I hope I'm not mangling your name too badly, Ciara. Good evening.
Good evening.
And we're going to be talking about making in the primary school. And I guess from your website, I can see you are a maker of the artistic bent, I guess. Maybe you could give us a sort of a brief introduction to yourself, where you've been, how you got to where you are, and where you are, really.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, John. So my name wasn't too bad. It's Ciara Gibson, and I've been teaching now for about 12 years. My current post is as principal teacher across Grantley and Kenmore Primary Schools in beautiful Highland Pressure, and I'm also part of the Pedagogy Motivator team. I suppose I have always considered myself to be a maker, from I was wee, always making things and just loving creating things, and that sort of led me into going to art college in Belfast, which sort of introduced me to a whole new world of making and things. And prior to teaching, I worked with quite a lot of children with learning disabilities, and sort of started then to get into making with young people and sort of seeing the difference that it could make in their lives. So I've always had that interest, and getting into teaching has really sort of allowed me to do that on a daily basis with children and get paid for it, which is brilliant.
Bring your hobby to life, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And you teach in Perthshire in the Highlands of Scotland, yes. Which I guess is a wee bit away from Belfast.
It is, yeah.
But I've not lost an accent, which is nice.
No, trying to hold on to it, yeah. So, I mean, where I work in as I said, I'm principal teacher across two schools, but I teach in Grantley Primary, which is a single class school, a multi-composite, and currently have pupils from P1 to 5, 18 of them, actually, at the moment.
Wow.
So quite a wide age range, and that provides a wealth of opportunities for making at all different stages. One of the things that I really like about working with the multi-composite is seeing the influence they can have on each other at different ages and stages. So while you have the older pupils who are maybe getting slightly more technical in the things that they want to do, you also have the younger ones who are just really going for it and just trying everything out that they can and just trying to figure it out.
I'm interested to, you know, to dig into that a wee bit more later on, because I've just started teaching in a multi-composite, and I'm finding it, I think, interesting is the word I would use. You know, the there are different sorts of challenges there. I'm just thanking goodness I don't have as many as 18, which seems weird since in days gone by I always had like 30 kids, but they were all the same age and the same size. So the main topic tonight is making in the primary. If folk are listening on Twitter, feel free to ask a question. If you use the hashtag Edutalk or mention myself or Ciara, and it's at Ciara Creative, and you'll see it on the Twitter stream if you're looking. If you mention either of us or use the hashtag Edutalk, we'll try and pick up any questions as we go along, so feel free to join in. So making in the primary classroom, I met you, I think, for the first time at the Pedigoo Muckle event, where you were leading a learning conversation in making in the primary school, which was fascinating. One, because it was really practical. You actually had brought on a big bunch of stuff, and we multitasked by listening, talking, and doing things at the same time. But it was a great conversation, but it was really brought it home to me, you know, how useful and glue and lollipop sticks and the likes are in the primary classroom. So maybe you could talk a wee bit about the concepts, how you get started and all the rest of it.
One of the things about what the conversation that we had at Muckle was really just the question I asked everyone at the start was, how much do you make with your pupils every day? And we had quite a mix, which is quite nice. We had a mix as well of primary and secondary at the table that day. And it was a question really about, what do you do with the children off a week that allows them to make something with their hands? And it was interesting, John, because you were saying that you did quite a lot of making, but it tended to be of the digital variety, which is obviously a really interesting, completely valid thing. And a lot of people are going down that route now, especially with a lot of iPads in classrooms and things like that. And it's sometimes just making people aware that making physical things is still just as valid. And the things that, if we're looking at the sort of skills that you can get out of that, problem solving is probably the biggest one. When you're making something, you're constantly thinking about what you're doing and how you're going to overcome the challenges that come up when you're making whatever it is you're making. And you need a lot of determination and persistence to keep going with something so that you don't end up like just giving up. And if anyone's ever made any IKEA furniture or anything like that, you'll know that all those skills are really important, or you end up with a pile of like random bits in the floor. So all of those skills that we're sort of always trying to push forward with the children across the curriculum, all of those can be sort of harnessed through making things. And I suppose it's making things in the widest sense of the word. So it can be not just, I think we had this discussion on the day, it's not just about art necessarily. Obviously you tend to think about art and visual art whenever you're making things, but it can be quite practical things in science and in technology, and especially with a lot of people doing a lot of outdoor learning, there's a lot of making involved in outdoor learning, you know, making and building fires, making dens, all that sort of stuff. So it goes right across the curriculum and really promotes creative thinking and also all those fine motor skills that you can find in the primary school. That's a big focus for us, is making sure that the children are really dexterous by the time they leave us.
So, kind of that, but those are all sort of wonderful ideas, I think, and it brings in, I mean, fine motor skills is quite an interesting one. I remember reading once that French children, even though they start writing later than our children, tend to have much better handwriting because they spend a lot of time in nursery, and they actually did quite, as far as I understand, boring, repetitive things like repeating movements with pegs and the likes, but this is maybe a more creative way.
So yeah, it's more, a wee bit more engaging. If you spend a lot of time building and making things, the children build up this sort of this dexterity that they need to have, and also strength in your hands. You forget, if anyone's ever recently, we've been using a lot of multi-link in my class at the minute with maths. And some of the children are like, oh, it's too hard. It's like, yeah, you've got to really build up the strength in your hands to be able to do these things. And, you know, cutting and sticking and trying to glue things together and tie things together and all that, that all builds up those skills. The other thing to sort of think about is one of the things we're really guilty of, I feel, in primary school is about focusing on products. So we focus a lot on what we want the children to end up with. And one of the key things whenever you're introducing any type of making in the school is about focusing more on the process, so that children are going through a process and understanding that when you come up against something that doesn't work, that you figure out another way of doing it, or that just in allowing them to enjoy their own thought process as they're building something or making something. Too often we're trying to drive them to an end product. Mm-hmm. That's our vision, it's our ideal, and not necessarily theirs.
I think maybe children fall easily into wanting to make something that's nice at the end.
Yes.
So do you talk explicitly about this to them?
It depends on what we're doing. So quite often they'll have I think the most important part of making anything is that visualization process. And if you talk children through that, so sit at the start and say, you know, what are you thinking of? What are you imagining in your head? Because then you get an idea of the scale of the thing that they're talking about. Sometimes it's ridiculously, you know, ambitious, and you have to, you know, while you want them to be ambitious, you're trying to talk them down. Yeah.
we don't have any girders, really, you know.
Like, yeah, let's size it down a little bit. Yeah. It's about allowing that, seeing, so they come up, they set out that visual idea of what they want, and then you're trying to facilitate them thinking about how you can provide them with the appropriate support and materials, but also allowing them to go through that making process. We had a couple of years ago, we had a great experience, and we worked with Clyde Built Puppet Theatre, and they come in, and absolutely fantastic in that they've got a very similar ethos to us, in that they go with what the children are thinking and allow them to be part of that planning process, which is really essential. and the children were talking about puppets and what they wanted, and they all wanted them to do different things. And one of my older group of girls wanted to make, we were responding to the 10 pieces of music project that BBC had run, mm-hmm. and we were listening to Stravinsky's Firebird, and the children wanted to make a giant firebird, and so we were trying to facilitate that with them, and also give them the courage to sort of try new things and figure out how it all worked together. And that was what was really interesting about that, is as a team initially they didn't really get on, they didn't really know how to engage with each other, but through this process of making, they built the relationship, because it was so big that it needed all four of them to fly it. Mm. They all needed to work together as a team, and they all needed to figure out what each person was going to do. Rather than me saying, okay, you're going to make a firebird, I think you can use these sticks here and you can use this here, allowing them to figure it all out. At the end of the day, they had complete ownership of the project and had sort of bonded as a team, and were able to, we flew the firebird everywhere. They took it everywhere we went. They took it with them and flew it for people. So I think one of the things there is about knowing when to stand back and to listen to what the children are wanting to do, and not limit their ambition, but also, you know, help them with that sort of realistic approach to things as well.
So that's quite a skill to be able to do that, I think.
I think especially as a teacher, we all think our ideas are the best, and we all have it very clearly thought out. And especially I'm the worst at that. You know, I'm a creative person. I've got all these ideas, and it's been my sort of journey over the past number of years has been standing back and understanding that the things that the children come up with are amazing and 10 times better than the things that you had initially planned, usually, and trying to come up with that, developing that partnership, working with them. So sometimes when you talk to people about that, they think it means that you stand back and let them do whatever they want. That's not what we mean. It's about allowing them to guide their process, but then you as a facilitator step in and support and scaffold, you know, as you're going.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is the bit that's hard, and I think quite often in schools when we're pressured, you want something nice up on the wall.
Yeah.
You want to show that you have not, you know, wasted three afternoons. That there's a real temptation to clamp down or to keep an awful lot of control. And I think we've all seen people, and we've probably all, I've certainly done it, where, you know, I give a very limited instruction set, which controls the output, so that, you know, we send down to the co-op, you know, something nice for their art competition.
Yeah.
And I guess what you're saying is, we should, you know, that's not really the best way to do things.
If what we're looking to create is creative thinking, problem solving, determined children and young people, that is not the way forward. Because, and I think it's what's really difficult is actually really giving them a voice. Because I've done the whole fake giving them a voice thing as well, where you go, yep, it's completely your idea, but why don't we just do it like this?
Let's write all your ideas on the wall, and then I'll choose the ones I want you to do.
But again, it's not about, I mean, I have extremely high expectations of what I'm expecting. And I think all of that is clarified in the visualization stage. So you can tell sort of when you're first starting about a project, if it's going wildly off topic, or if they've got, you know, they've got the wrong end of the stick or whatever. And similarly, part of the creative process is finding those bits where it doesn't work out, and then looking at how you can change it and how you can make it work out. Now, in the past, I'm completely guilty of, at the end of the day, looking at everything that's been made and sort of tidying it up, or going, oh, well, maybe if I cut that bit out, that'll look better. And then the children come in and they're like, what happened to my work? That's not what I left.
You've chopped his head off.
Yeah, exactly. So going through that process with them, and also that having a bit of peer feedback is also really useful. As they grow up, they, you know, they need to take on board feedback and advice and suggestions from a whole range of people.
I was interested in the four children working together to make the Firebird, and you said it brought them all together.
Yeah.
And again, over the years, I've seen many cases where children are working together, but it's two people out of the four who are doing the majority of the work, and the other two are just on the periphery.
Yeah.
And one's in the periphery. And do you think is there a way to try and avoid that happening?
I think with that scenario, and it was definitely a danger of happening, what happened was that they all took a clear role, and it was that role that they each took and each had, and it was quite, Lee and Steve, who were facilitating that session, they were quite good at supporting the children to take on the different roles. So it's like, right, you focus on doing the head at this point, you focus on doing the right, and there was that discussion, so each person had a wee bit of ownership of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think sometimes whenever it comes together, so if it's a group project, so a group are deciding to make something, quite often it can be the person whose voice is the loudest gets their idea heard, and it's, or everyone's put their ideas in, but one idea comes out. So it's always best to sort of try and get an aspect of everyone's idea into the final project, so as everyone feels that there's at least a bit of them in that, you know. And that helped a lot. Plus, the fact that to actually the physical construction of the thing was really quite tough, and it needed all four of them lifting things and moving things. It's a bit similar, I suppose, when you're doing like den making or anything quite big and physical that actually requires everyone physically holding things together or balancing things, that sort of stuff. Had a similar project. Last year we were looking at medieval life and things, and again this was sort of, we were going down the route of like listening to their ideas and things, and they wanted to build a catapult. Again, they wanted to build a giant one. I'm like, well, let's start with a small model. Yeah. So we started with a model one, and we had some parents in helping us, which was great as well. But building a catapult was one of those things that it needed about five pairs of hands holding things while elastic bands went round other bits and stuff. So the more physical requirements of a project like that, the more the grip bonds, because you physically can't do it without people. Similar when you're, you know, if you're like glue gunning stuff together or tying something, you need lots of people in there to help you. So it's quite a good way of making people realize that you can't do everything on your own.
And conversely, would you do things where the children do work on their own?
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about any sort of making is that it can be incredibly therapeutic. Not the making where you're getting really frustrated and it's not working, but that those times when you're just, thinking, where you're just sitting, thinking and making and working away sort of in your own wee world, and I think that's just as beneficial to give children that wee bit of mindfulness, that sort of time out to just sort of focus on something that they're really engaged with.
It kind of brings to mind that I guess 50 years ago I would have been sitting in a classroom somewhere making pom-poms.
Yeah. Or,
I'm sure that didn't do an awful lot to connect me or make me, you know, it may have made my fingers stronger.
But even just that sort of simple repetitive thing, it could be really just sort of, it's therapeutic to sit and have a moment. And one of the things recently as well, like making pom-poms, it's something that even just as a wee group, all sitting around making pom-poms, having a chat, talking while you're doing it. We do quite a lot of sewing, and that tends to happen where we're all sitting around having a wee chat about something, you know, but while you're making. And it's amazing the level of chat you'll get out of children whenever their hands are engaged in something different. They don't even realise what they're, you know, they open up a little bit more and sort of get involved in things because they're just happily sewing or making or frittering away with something.
So all that binko wasn't wasted?
Not at all.
That seemed to be a thing in my youth in the primary, that you would do handcrafts, but as I say, they weren't linked in the same way.
Did you make a sampler? I think everyone at that point made it.
And things to stand teapots on, and yeah. all sorts of things. But a lot of it involved quite repetitive work, which I guess maybe does give you a wee bit of meditation.
Yeah.
One of the things that I noticed and you talked about at Pedigoo was the materials.
Yes.
And the, I guess thinking about it, it's a no-brainer, but I think it's something that's missed out in quite a lot of schools because of budgets and things like that.
Yeah.
That you were saying that you really needed quality materials.
You do. High-quality resources are essential. I've yet to see any great things made from crayons and sugar paper. Now, that can happen, but generally, if you give children, you wouldn't want to use those things. So you make sure that you use things that are pleasurable to work with. So especially if you've got children who aren't that keen on doing things or making things with their hands, they're not going to improve or want to do it anymore if you give them really shoddy materials. And I know that budgets are really, really short, but you have to be quite clever with what you have. One of the main things is sharp scissors. Not the worst thing is giving children blunt scissors, because they'll never learn to use scissors, because if they don't work, they just keep sort of hacking away at things. So my main things that I always have, and everyone thinks I'm a bit, I'm quite regimented in what I require in my classroom. Black cards, a big one, always a black card. Black fine pens for drawing and mark making and things. Decent glue, and that can be just PVA glue or whatever, but decent glue. And sharp scissors. Even the things that we had at the Muckle workshop, that was just like stuff I'd gathered. So Amazon, anytime you buy anything from Amazon now, you get really, really good quality cardboard. You just gather that up. And things like little bits of ribbon and stuff. Quite often I'm desperate. My husband's always complaining. I've got mounds and mounds of random things in the house. But even like, you know, the, like the little ribbon things you get inside shirts or dresses or tops or anything like that, you're meant to keep it onto hangers. I cut all those off and have like lots of supplies of all these bits of ribbon and things like that. So quite often you can find high quality materials in your everyday life and just sort of gather them. And especially with the sort of the big zero waste focus at the minute, a lot about reusing and things, get parents to send in bits and pieces. But as a school, if you make sure that you have the basics, like good glue and scissors and things, and then all the other little bits and pieces can be acquired from other places. The other big point is about making things like real life scenarios. So what you're making is, you do things for making sake, you know, just to have fun and engage with new things, but also make things that will be beneficial to you in real life. And that can be, a lot of that stuff as well can happen in the outdoor learning category. So learning to do things that require you to tie knots, learning to join things, learning to make shelters, all of those sorts of things that the children can see a real relevance to, and using materials that actually work for that. So I suppose it's about using things that are fit for purpose.
I wonder, could you just maybe give us a couple of examples and dig in a wee bit to the sort of whole process, and maybe some of the, you know, the benefits as you see them to these particular ones and things that happened. And
like I said, we tend to look at whatever it is that we're doing and then make around it. One of the things that we did recently we were involved in, I think it was two years we've been involved in the Christmas decoration exchange. I don't know if anyone's heard of that on Twitter. It's something we've got in through Twitter. That's just something that's coming up that people might want to sort of get involved in. And so that had a purpose. It was making decorations, which were then sent to other schools around Scotland. Actually, I think it was in Europe as well. So one of those examples was that the children came up with an idea of what they wanted, and they decided that they wanted to, at the time we were sewing things, so they made lots of little felt ornaments. So that was, there was a purpose to it. They wanted to engage with other schools, and also it was a festive, you know, celebration. It was hanging decorations. I'm really quite passionate about not doing little decorations that are just ready made for them. So I made them design them. I'm like, right, okay, we're going to show off to the other schools here what you're going to do. So they designed their little things, and then we just used felt, the felt squares. They designed them, cut them out, and then figured out how to sew them together and how they would stuff them. And we had all different ideas for stuffing and things like that. So all of that, that was actually last year. So that was for the P1 to 6. So we had from the youngest children right up to the P6, all figuring out how to sew and how to stuff it, and would you put the stuffing in, when would you do that, would you do it, you know, right round to where someone had sewn it all up and then gone, ah, I've forgotten to put the stuffing in, and then figuring out how you undo that and go back and figure it out.
So the children, I'm presuming you had done some sewing before this.
We had, some of them had, some of them hadn't. So it's a real mix. So it's just talking about, and again, in the multi-composites, you've got the ones, some of the ones who had done it before, showing the other ones that haven't done it. And you'll get that in any class. You'll have a few that know how to do something. Mm-hmm. And so we sat and we looked at it all and just started to problem solve. You know, what would you do? Oh, where would you put your knot? Would you put your knot in it now before you pull it up through the fabric? What would you do? And so with that sort of project, it's quite useful to have them working in little groups. So they're sitting chatting about techniques and things like that. So that was a really, that really focused on the persistence required, especially for sewing, if you've ever done it with children, the persistence to not get fed up whenever it gets tangled for the 10th time. But when they do it, when they can do it on their own, they get so excited.
So that'd be one. Have you got any tips for encouraging the children who are maybe immediately disengaged with the idea of sewing because they find it, you know, really difficult because of their motor skills and things like that?
Well, I think it would be looking at, preempt that. So whenever you're talking about the project that you're going to do, you get the vibe, who's going to, you know, and then talk through the issues at the outset. So like, what are you thinking? Not sure. Monitoring those ones that are getting really frustrated with it. We had a couple in my class who'd be like, you know, because I was being a wee bit nasty. I was making them thread their own needles, you know, because once you've threaded like the 10th needle, you're like, right, I need someone else. I need someone else to be doing this. So we were looking at all the different techniques that you could use, and so then we were trying all different needle sizes, that sort of thing, you know, to make sure that the person, but it's about them being really motivated to do it in the first place. So, and that comes back down to the visualization process that I was talking about before. It has to be their thing. It has to be something that they actually want to do. And that as a motivating factor will support them in overcoming a lot of their issues. And again, just maybe even pairing them up with someone who does have this, has slightly different skill set to them. So they can maybe give them the ideas, they do a bit of sewing. And another technique that I use quite a lot with children who find a particular difficulty with something is that paired idea, either with me or with another child. So it's where you make a deal, you know, right, okay, you do that wee bit, and then I'll do the next, and then you do that, and I'll do the next. And that works quite well.
Because I think, I mean, that obviously is that a thing you're going to have to spend time on. And one of the things, I guess, is how much time does this all take?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I was quite excited about was whenever we're talking about evidencing work now, which everyone sort of gets really scared about, like what re-evidence. And the four ways that we're being advised to evidence things are do, make, say, and write. And make is one of the main ones of those. So that's a whole, you know, quarter of your possibilities for evidencing any work you do. But if you plan for that, so if you plan that you are at the end of your, so say you decide you're going to physically make a book or physically, you know, make something that's going to, so we've made books in the past, we create the artist book, whatever, and sew it all up. You plan that in. As part of all of your lessons is making that book. You don't learn about it, and then make it at the end. The making is, it's the learning. It's all the way through. So trying to see it as part of your, it's part of your learning process, it's part of your lesson, rather than a thing that you do at the end of a project or something you build up to.
Yeah, because I guess I would always have done this, you know, thing at the end, we would do our research and all the rest of it, and then you'd be galloping at the end to try and get things finished.
One of the things we did with that a couple of years ago, we did a World War, we were doing about World War, and they wanted to make a trench. And we started to build the trench as we were learning about it, and it went built on from that. And otherwise, it would never have gotten made. But the building of the trench was the learning, it was the research. So they were starting to make it, and then they would have to, I said, well, how do you know that's what it's like? And they'd go, hold on. They'd go off and research it, come back, oh, yeah. And we even had like needle felted rats and stuff. Okay.
So this is a model trench.
We didn't go full scale.
You were digging out the garden. Interesting, a few years ago I saw a talk by Neil Winton, who teaches, what was that time, was teaching I think in Perth Academy, and this was in secondary school, and one of the things he brought along was a cake that was made by one of his children when they were studying World War I poets. Brilliant. I think, and they had made this cake with the right kind of planking, well, I think chocolate fingers, to do this. But they had tons of detail, and I think they actually even had an explosion in the middle of the cake. So, you can take this idea, I guess, out of the primary and into the secondary.
Completely.
So, I realise that we're hitting the half hour mark, but I've still got a few questions, and you may have other things to say as well.
No, go for it. You'll be trying to shut me up in an hour's time. Please stop.
If I wasn't doing this regularly, what would be a good place to start getting this idea and to get it, or get what we're talking about, the sort of principles right from the start, not over helping and not over controlling? What would be a good way to sort of dip our toes in?
Okay, I think one of the things, and I think it's always I'm always a wee bit wary when I'm talking about it, because obviously it's like, oh, you went to art college, or you're really arty. You don't have to be that. And what's really important is to think about how you as a person, because one of the things that I love about it is that I'm able to do things that I like to do as a person in the school. And, you need that in your career as well, to given the chance to sort of explore your own interests as well. And every single one of us has something that we are interested in our own lives. And I think the more you can bring that into the school. So I would say always start with something that you feel slightly confident with. And that doesn't necessarily have to be arty making, as I was saying before. That might be that you're particularly into cooking or baking or something like that. Or even if you're just into building things or making things, or try and think about, is there any way in your own life that you do some making? So you're starting from a point of confidence yourself. In terms of trying to fit it into what you're doing, don't be afraid to learn with the pupils and for the pupils to see you as a learner. And I've done that quite a lot recently, where I've been trying to new techniques and things, and I don't actually know how to do them. When you're seen to be looking it up and you're saying, oh, I'm not sure how to do that, and they're showing you things, that's really powerful for the pupils to see that you're still a learner and to sort of learn alongside them. But there's some other really good resources that you can use to sort of get you into that mindset. One of the most inspiring things for me at the moment is a website, an organisation called Access Art, and you can check them out at accessart.org.uk. Paula Briggs, who runs it, it's a charity that's aimed to inspire teaching and learning through visual arts, and she's just brought out, I think I talked about it at Pedagogy Muckle, a manifesto for making, and it really focuses on how to get more people making things. And on Access Art, you can go on and have a wee look at the site. It is a subscription to sort of get more involved in it, but I would say it's well worth it. But she also has a great book called Make, Build, Create, and it talks you through the sort of what some people might consider the scary bits and pieces of, like, what mod rock is, and how you might want to introduce clay, and there's a wee section on how to use pliers and using a glue gun, all those sorts of things that if you've never done it before, you're like, oh my goodness, that takes, that's specialist stuff. So something like that, if you're not confident in it, even just having a wee look at something, a book like that, can sort of allay your fears a wee bit. And start small. Start by doing something, again, that you're going to feel confident in. And if you're not, something along the lines of working alongside a colleague that is. I think the more that we share, obviously talking as a pedagogy moderator, the more that we share our ideas and our resources and our time with each other, and support each other, the more that we can share that skill set around a wee bit. So if there's someone maybe in your school that you've always seen doing something like that, you know, go up and say to them, hey, I'm wanting to get into this a wee bit. So I suppose start small, try and find something that you feel quite confident in, that you feel that, that you're, and take the time for it, plan for it. Don't try and rush it in a, you know, in a half an hour at the end of an afternoon. Actually take some time and plan for it and really enjoy it and sort of see where it leads you. And don't have any big, I think the process and not the product. So don't have a big idea of like a big massive display that you're going to do at the end with these perfect things. Enjoy the process. And that allows you to stand back a wee bit whenever you're really not freaking out about the end result, and the things that have to go up on the wall or whatever. So try and do it as something that you're just going to enjoy the process of a little bit, you know.
Well, if you can enjoy it and to pay for it, that sounds like really, really good advice. And when we get the link to the manifesto into the show notes on the archive, which should be up in a day or two.
Yeah.
I'm probably run out of questions. I've got a lot of ideas now. and I mean, when I talked to you in at the meeting, I went straight back and ordered a glue gun from Amazon, and, you know, started a few wee things off, which are still chuntering away in the background at the usual rate of completion due to everything else that gets in the way. But
That's what baking is. Think of your own life. Think of all the projects you've started, and they're sort of just ongoing. Sometimes they need time and space to develop.
But it definitely seems. Oh, the other thing this is, I think, an important question. We've got this 25% of the sort of recording or the evidencing of learning, making being an important part of that. How much is this involved in across the curriculum in your week?
I'm trying to think. It depends. So most projects will have a making element to them. They're definitely making something every week. Not necessarily every day. I'm trying to think what on at the minute. So today we were doing a lot of. We've been making potions this week actually. With Halloween and everything, we started off this week with being outside and making potions. So we made all these various potions that then went into jars that then needed labelling, that then needed so we needed to make an encyclopedia of the potions, so as we knew which each potion did. So it stimulated all of our writing. So that was a making at the start as a stimulus. Rather than I'll make it as you go along, but you know, so that's sort of what they are. So I would say that they definitely are making something every week, to varying degrees. You know, we'll have like we made a film last term, so there was lots of little makings involved in that before. So we had to make props and costumes, and then there was the total of the actually making the film bit. Which was different. So I suppose it's just that mindset that they can, and trying to figure out how they're now of that mindset where they're wanting to make things all the time, and especially with my younger children, I've got 7 P1s who are making stuff every day. Just lots of I've just got sort of like a big area in the classroom which is. Stuff and things, and sort of all just resources out so they can go and cut and stick and make and all of that whenever they need to.
Sounds like they need to quite often. And you did that's another question, sorry, that once you've been doing this for a while and you're saying the children are you know, expecting to or asking to.
Yeah.
So will they bring ideas to the table if you're doing, you know, a particular topic or something like that?
Oh, yeah, quite often. I mean, the first thing when we were starting about talking about the film, we're like, well, we'll need to make the costumes, and we'll need to make this, and we'll need to, and that's our first sort of thought is we will need to make that now. They're quite self-sufficient in that way. They always want to make it themselves rather than get something in. The other thing that's really good is that trying to encourage them to, I mean, I have to do this anyway, and you'll know yourself in a monthly compass that you're only one person. So building up a support system for each other enables them to be more self-sufficient. So quite often one of them's making something and they'll be like, oh, can you hold this for me, or I need this, or can you go and get this sellotape for that, or whatever. That's the other thing, you should have lots of in the classroom, sellotape. Children sellotape. Sellotaping everything all the time.
Yeah, I think children have got an aesthetic filter that enables them to look at something and not notice the 40 layers of sellotape they're holding it together, which, you know, makes your heart sink, but it doesn't seem to bother them if it actually works. Yeah.
Well, we've had a rule in my class, there's no sellotape allowed on fabric or material. It just doesn't go, sorry. You'll need to find another joining method, the sellotape will work. So that's how you end up with higher quality products. You have like certain ground rules, you know.
Yeah. You can't glue everything then.
No. Although I'm quite fond of a stapler as well.
Yeah, it's a good way of keeping your trousers turned up, certainly. So the extent of my sewing is probably a stapler in a bad time. So I just really need to say thanks very much for coming on and talking to us. I don't know if you have any final messages. I think there's been a real good bunch of takeaways from tonight's show, and it sort of fits in quite well with last week's, where Will Tuft was talking about preparing this creative space for his pupils, and it's almost like at the primary level the pupils are creating their own props and things like that to learn in amongst. But yeah, I've really enjoyed talking to you tonight, so a huge thanks from me.
Thank you very much.
I say, I don't know if you get any final words, but I think just get making would be it, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, get making, and don't be afraid of it. Just have a go, and it's, once you start, it's difficult to stop. And like I said, for my I'm on Twitter at Kira Creative, and welcome any chat, or as you can hear, I will talk forever on this. So just get in touch if you want any more information.
So your Twitter handle and your blog, which is
yes, I've got Curious Makery, and there's also if you check out to see what Grantley's up to, you can check at Grantley PS, and also if you go onto there, you'll see the Grantley blog as well, which we try and keep up to date with all our making goings on there.
So we'll try and get that into the show notes along with the manifesto, so that'll be a good place to start, and certainly just get the ideas, and as Christmas is coming up, hopefully some ideas to steal from the rest of us. That would be great. So thank you very much. If you've been listening, or you are listening to the podcast, I think you've got a free invitation to ask Kira for some help. So please do, and if you've enjoyed the show and you know anybody else, or you'd enjoy being on yourself, give us a shout either on Twitter or some other method of communication. So I'm just going to hang up the broadcast now and say goodnight, folks. Cheers.